Hey there, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. I am excited to announce that you can now find my podcast on the Mountain Bike Radio Network. So if you go to mountainbikeradio.com, you'll find a network of a bunch of great mountain bike related podcasts, and I'm one of the newest members to the network there. So you can both find my podcast there, and you can use their free mobile app to download and listen to the podcast. So gives people another option besides iTunes to keep up with my podcast. But there you go, mountainbikeradio.com. Definitely check them out. And like I said, another way for you to get my podcast. So getting into the podcast, this edition, or in this episode, what I want to talk about is the idea of how perception drives movement function, and movement function drives perception. And this is a very profound concept. It's something that I heard on a podcast. Gray Cook with the Functional Movement Screen was talking about this concept. I think it's actually one of his 10 core movement principles that he talks about in his book, Movement. But the basic idea behind it is that there's a lot more that goes into how you perform than just the raw nuts and bolts of the body. Right, so your muscles and your cardiovascular system and all of those things, they definitely affect your performance. But behind all of that is the brain. The brain drives everything, and you know the brain, it drives your perception, it drives your movement function, and those things are definitely going to affect your performance. So I wanted to talk about this concept and explain how it applies in a couple ways on the bike, because there's definitely a couple big key areas on the bike where this comes into play. So I need to kind of explain what it means first, and then I'll explain how it ties into the bike, and you'll get an idea of how some common advice and bike tools and setup tips are actually holding you back without you even knowing it. So again, getting back to this idea, perception drives movement function, and movement function drives perception. So what does that mean? Perception is basically how your brain interprets things. Your brain is always, you know, besides just the obvious stuff, the sight, sound, smell, touch, your brain has all sorts of other, you know, internal things that it uses to interpret where it is in space, what kind of stress it is under, how, you know, just posture, balance, things like that. Your brain is constantly monitoring all of those things on a subconscious level. You don't know that it's doing it, and you're not necessarily able to consciously understand what it understands. But how it, what it perceives will affect how you're able to move. And how you move will also affect how your brain perceives things. So I've got a couple of examples to explain this. But again, the take-home message is that your brain interprets things on two levels. One, the conscious level, and two, the subconscious level. And the first is what you actually think and feel. It's basically that voice in your head that's telling you, you know, where, you know, if how confident you feel about something, you know, whether you know what's going on. So that, again, it ties into this idea of physical and mental confidence that I've touched on before. I'll link to the article that I wrote on that. Again, another very important concept to help drive your performance. But the second level, the subconscious level, again, it's called subconscious because it takes place below our conscious perception. And there's no way that we can know exactly what it is thinking. However, what it is thinking does have an effect on what we are thinking on our conscious level, and also how we're able to move and perform. So again, let me give you a couple of examples to explain this. So the first one, let me explain how perception can drive movement function. So let's say I'm going to ask you to do a squat. So that's the movement function. I'm going to ask you to move, and the function is I want you to squat. And I'm going to have you do it with your feet with a, you know, shoulder width apart, weight distributed evenly on your feet, and you're standing on a solid surface. And I'm going to have you squat and say we're going to do a max effort squat, see how much weight you can lift. Now, imagine I ask you to do the same squat. I need you to do the same squat pattern, your feet in an exact same position, but now I want you to get up on the balls of your feet, so you're kind of balancing on your toes, And I'm also going to put you on a surface that doesn't really have any like rotational or lateral friction. Like you can stay balanced as long as your feet don't move left or right or try to rotate left or right. But if they do, they're going to move some. There's going to be a little bit of play between your foot and the floor. So it's not a totally stable surface. Now, again, I don't think it's very tough to imagine that you're going to have a lot harder time with that second scenario. Like, no matter how much time I give you to practice, and no matter how comfortable you get squatting in that, you know, with your feet in that position and with that surface, your brain is always going to perceive that as a less stable, less powerful position, and it's going to shut down the strength and power to the legs. Like, you will never be able to squat or produce as much power with your legs in the second scenario simply because your brain perceives that you're not balanced and you're not stable, and it is going to literally shut down the signals to the legs to not allow them to function as they normally would. So, you know, this is how perception drives movement function. Your perception of this of the situation will affect how you move. If you are not balanced and you're not stable, that will affect how you move. Your brain will interpret that and make your body behave differently than if you are more stable and you are more balanced. So again, that's how perception can drive movement function. Now, the second example is how movement function can drive perception. And the example I like to use for this is a rider who wants to learn how to jump on their bike. And, you know, that's a really big, you know, request. A lot of people who are pretty good on their bikes still struggle with the ability to hit jumps, especially like legitimate dirt jumps, not just trail jumps where you just ride fast and you just, you know, kind of go off of it, but like jumps where you actually have to like pop the lip and work the jump a little bit. So, you know, learning to do that can be really tough if you have no hip hinge. Like basically, if this rider can't touch their toes, they're unable to drive their hips back and use their hips to move and not their lower back, then they're going to struggle. I can explain to them all day long how to jump and show them how to jump and go over it with them. But if they lack the fundamental movement needed to drive the skill, the jumping will always feel hard or practically impossible to them. You know, they'll be intimidated by small jumps because they're going to lack consistency. Some jumps will feel all right. Some jumps will feel really unbalanced. And they just have like a general feeling of not being balanced in the air. And again, it all ties back to their inability to move properly. They don't have the proper hip hinge movement pattern that they need to drive the jumping skill in a balanced way. And so, again, all the information in the world is not going to change their perception of jumping. That jumping's never going to feel easier until they fix what's wrong. So now, if you spend some time, it could be a few weeks or a few months, working on your hip hinge, and you get that hip hinge under control, and you learn how to apply that hip hinge to moving your hips forward and back while keeping a neutral spine, well, this time when you try hitting jumps, they're going to feel different. They will feel more stable. They'll feel more consistent. And all of a sudden, this increases your confidence. Now, all of a sudden, jumps that you were perceiving as being big and scary now don't look as big and scary. And, you know, you're able to move up and repeat the process. But that's the idea of how movement function is going to drive perception. If you lack the basic movement ability that you need to move the way that you need to execute the skill, then the skill is always going to feel hard. Another good example of this that I'll touch on more here in just a second is standing pedaling. This is another, like, this is why most riders interpret standing pedaling to be hard, because they lack a lot of the fundamental core strength and hip strength and movement skills that they need to do it efficiently and effectively. And so again, until you fix that, standing pedaling will always feel hard. So again, just another example of how movement can drive perception. But the thing is in both of these examples, your performance was affected more by how you subconsciously perceived the situation. Either your brain perceiving balance and stability, or your ability to move affecting how your brain subconsciously interprets its ability to perform certain skills. So both of those things were affected more by how you subconsciously perceive the situation and how you were able to move than anything else. So again, like I can, you know, have you strengthen your muscles. I can have you, you know, do mobility work to lengthen the muscles. I can have you, you know, do cardio work. But if we don't have all those things tie into, you know, we don't affect the core thing of how you're subconsciously perceiving the situation or how you're able to move, then, and how those things apply to the bike, then we're not affecting what we want. So real quick, a couple of examples of how this affects us on the bike in a few areas. So number one is clipless pedals. And I'll just get this one out of the way real quick. Clipless pedals are like balancing on your toes and standing on a surface with no real lateral or rotational friction. Like, it's basically like the first example that I explained. It's essentially what pedal float is you, your foot is able to twist from side to side. There's no resistance. So again, that's almost like being on ice. I mean, it's not as bad on being on ice, but it's definitely, you know, almost as bad. Your foot is not on a stable surface where it can, you know, where it has friction in every direction. It is frictionless in some direction, and that is not how your foot is made to work. In fact, one of the podcasts that I've done, again, I'll link to it on this post, it was with a guy named Andy Clowers, who is a barefoot pedaling or barefoot training expert, barefoot training and barefoot running expert. And he actually knows very little to nothing about cycling, but I met him through some fitness circles and had him on to do an interview and explain a little bit about how the foot works and how the foot affects the rest of the body and how what happens to the foot affects the rest of the body. And he was one of the things that he pointed out that I had never actually thought about until then was how when you restrict your foot like you do with clipless pedal shoes that usually have very stiff soles or very tight arch support, restrict the foot, don't let it move as freely as it would without all of that support and the stiff arch. And you also have that unnatural balance point of being on the ball of your foot and having that frictionless rotation of float. All three of those things add up to be very unnatural, very unbalanced, very, you know, your brain perceives those as bad things for the foot, and it will actually start to shut down your balance and movement skills as a result. So again, this was a guy who's got no, a horse in this race, so to speak. He's got nothing to do with the cycling industry, just talking about here's what we know about the foot, and here's what we know about what happens to the rest of the body based on when you restrict the foot, how it changes your body's perception and how that change in perception will then change your movement quality without you being able to perceive that it's being changed. So again, that the clipless pedals will definitely change your body's perception of its ability to be stable and balanced, especially when you stand up. And this leads me to the second thing, which is I've already touched on it before, which is too much seated pedaling. And again, you know, some of this stems from the use of clipless pedals. A lot of it stems, though, from the lack of requisite movement skills that you need to efficiently and effectively get into a standing pedaling position. So a lot of times you have a couple of things working against you when you stand up to pedal. Again, the first being if you're on clipless pedals, if you're on the ball of your foot, you're in a very unstable, unbalanced position. Your body's going to want, that's why it feels more stable and more balanced, to be able to sit down and use your butt in contact with the seat as an extra balance point, because your feet are in such an unbalanced, unnatural position to begin with. Plus, a lot of riders come into mountain biking with bad posture, poor core strength, poor hip strength, and a lot of the things that you need to be able to stand up and power your bike. I've got a couple of videos on my site that go into this, but one of the things that I am adamant about trying to explain to riders is that when you stand up to ride, you have to change your total body position. Standing up is not just keeping the same body position and just raising your butt up off of the seat. Standing pedaling has you push your hips forward, your shoulders come up, things, your shoulders and hips get stacked on top of each other. The position of your feet in relation to your hips, you become more on top of your feet instead of being behind your feet like you are when you're sitting down. So a lot of things have to change, excuse me, from a movement standpoint for you to get into the most efficient, powerful position to be, to stand up to pedal. And so again, if you lack the core strength, you lack the hip strength, you lack the mobility and stuff that you need to get in those positions, then standing up will always feel hard. So again, this is one of those things where movement quality is driving your perception. Until your movement quality is able to improve, your perception will always be that standing up is this hard position and always wanting to feel the need to sit back down. And also one of the things, a third thing that I'll point out is the use of long stems. And again, when you pull your shoulders too far forward, like you do with what happens with the long stem, it makes the bike less stable when descending, and it also makes it less stable when you're standing up to pedal. And you know, so again, your perception starts to drive your movement quality. If you stand up to pedal, or you're, you know, descending down something, and you've got a long stem, and I would consider anything over 60 millimeters on a mountain bike to be a long stem. So if you've got 100 plus millimeter long stem, because you've been told this is what you need for proper, you know, usually it centers around climbing, seated climbing is what the long stem is good for. I mean, really, you know, setting up your bike based on seated climbing, that's the worst position for you to base your mountain bike setup on. I mean, that's like the last thing that you should be considering is like, how efficient is this going to be for seated climbing? And even then, you know, a lot of that has to do with like bad shoulder mobility and trying to compensate with it with bike fit. But anyways, the point is that if you get a long, too long of a stem and you're trying to descend, your hips, your center of gravity are just, they're too far forward. It's tough to get your hips back as far as you need to really feel balanced and stable as you're descending, especially the steeper things get, the more technical things get. So, you know, no matter how hard you try, the fact that you have this long stem, it's going to be slowing down your steering, making you feel less balanced and stable, and it will change your perception of the trail will be that certain sections are very scary and very technical and very hard. Whereas as soon as you change the stem and you get a shorter stem and you're automatically able to get into a better position because of that, your steering is quicker. You're not as extended away from your, the steer tube and all that. But anyways, you're automatically going to feel the difference on the trail, and that's going to change your perception. You're going to feel more stable and more balanced in positions that you wouldn't have before. So again, these are just three ways, how clipless pedals, long stems, and too much seated pedaling are all kind of tied into this perception drives movement function, and movement function drives perception. And so, the take home message is really this, that it really comes down to just trying to apply natural movement to the bike. I've said this before, but the biggest problem that we've run into in the cycling world in general is that we've fallen for the lie that just because we're sitting on a bike, that all bets are off, that we don't know anything. We have to just start from scratch. That how we function and how we move off of the bike doesn't really apply to the bike because the bike is different. When that's wrong. That's not. Once we sit on a bike, the way that we move doesn't change. The things that that work for us off of the bike from a functional movement, posture, balance, strength, all of those things are going to apply on the bike as well. So if we just try to look at how is our body function most effectively off of the bike, now how can we try to apply that to the bike? You'll start to look at how you're, some of these things a little bit differently and try to look to apply this more natural movement to the bike. So again, if you're looking at how your foot interacts with the ground, a clipless pedal and shoe combination looks nothing like that compared to a flat pedal and shoe combination. Looking at our posture and how we're designed to stand up and create movement, you look at seated pedaling versus standing pedaling, and you see that standing pedaling is a much more natural position for us to be in rather than that seated pedaling position. And, again, the long stems just kind of derives from too much seated pedaling, to be honest with you. If people did not sit down to pedal so much, there would not be the obsession with the long stem, because you wouldn't be trying to have some weight over the front end as you're sitting down to climb. So once you stand up, you have weight on the front end. You don't have to worry about that. So anyway, so that's just some different ways. There's a lot of different ways this applies to the bike, but those are some of the big ones that I wanted to point out. And like I said, it's tough when I'm trying to talk to riders about some of these concepts and they don't understand that some of the tools, some of the things that they're doing, some of the advice that they're following, and some of the equipment that they have on their bike is literally changing their perception and their movement function, which is changing their ability to perform and their perception of the trail and their ability to do certain things. So, don't be trapped by your equipment and by these things. You can break free of them and, definitely improve your riding significantly once you do. So just some food for thought. I'm sure you probably got some thoughts on that. So feel free to visit me at the blog at bikejams.com and share a comment with me, and I'll be sure and get to it as soon as I can. So, and while you're there, if you haven't done so already, you can be sure and sign up for my 30-day mountain bike skills and fitness program. It's a free workout program I put together to kind of show you guys how you can put together strength, mobility, and skills training to really change your riding on all sorts of different levels. So, just something for you to check out there. And, so that's it. Does it for another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Once again, it's been James Wilson. You can check me out on the web at bikejames.com, and I'll talk to you next time.